All right, after 2 o'clock, so I'm gonna call to order the JEDCO Pilot Advisory Committee. We're meeting here at the JEDCO Administration Building, 700 Churchill Parkway, Avondale, Louisiana, 70094. Today is March 25th, 2024, 2 o'clock. I wanna start by calling the meeting to order and doing a roll call. Michael Adler.
Here.
Is present. Myself, Jerry Bologna is present. Joe Yule is here.
He's here.
Stepped out for a second. Bob Stevens is present, and Jim Martin is present. So we're all here. I wanna start by asking if you've all had a chance to review the minutes from the February 20th, 2024 meeting. If you've had a chance to review those, I'll seek a motion to accept.
Move.
Second.
Moved by Michael Adler, seconded by Jim Martin. All in favor, accepting those, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Now, I will seek any public comments on any of the agenda items under unfinished and new business. And I think we have a couple of people here, but what we'll do is have them comment on the particular projects. With that, we'll move into unfinished and new business, starting with the review and discussion of the Latrim LLC pilot lease and lease terms deferred from the February 20th, 2024 meeting in Lacey.
Right, okay. So on August 29th, we got received a request from Latrim to do a second pilot. Our existing pilot lease with Latrim was effective August 1st, 2019, and it was this year, or at least 2023, was the last year in which Latrim could bring assets into the pilot and subject them to the lease. But per our existing lease, Latrim had 5 years to add assets into the pilot, so it was 2019 to 2023. So that means the assets that are currently subject to the lease are enjoying anywhere from a 10-year tax abatement to 14-year tax abatement at 80%. Both JEDCO and Latrim feel that this is working out. It's fulfilling the intended purpose by, you know, providing certainty to Latrim in terms of their annual tax payments and alleviating what has become a bit of a bureaucratic hassle of and there's uncertainty with it, of having to go before the Jefferson Parish Sheriff and the Jefferson Parish Council and Jefferson Parish School Board under the ITEP program. So under this lease, we kept the percentage abatement equal to what an ITEP currently offers, industrial tax exempt. I just realized maybe not all of you here know what ITEP is. It's a state incentive program at 80% abatement. Well, Latrim plans continued growth in the parish over the next several years with more, of course, machinery, equipment, significant building improvements. There's a potential for the development of a new line called Prime Shrimp, or at least that's what it's being called currently, which is a retail cooking bag product that is currently in proof of concept stage. But, you know, seeing that that isn't an option, we'd love to have that. We'd love to capture that in Jefferson Parish. So with the plans for the continued investment in Jefferson Parish facilities, Latrim requested this new pilot lease for a tax abatement on future asset additions. So what I've done in this memo is just kind of compare the existing lease to what is being proposed in the new lease. As compared to the existing lease, Latrim has requested a new pilot lease that extends the period of time within which assets can be conveyed to JEDCO. So under existing lease, it's those 5 years, 2019 to 2023. But under the new lease, they have 10 years now from this year, will be 2024 asset additions. We would bring them over into the pilot at the end of the year. And then through 2043. It's so hard to imagine this. Oh no, that's the full 20-year term. Sorry, 5 years from 2029. The company has also requested a greater capital investment cap than the current agreement. Currently, it stands at $250 million. This proposed pilot, it stands at $400 million. So Latrim can bring up to $400 million of assets into the pilot. And therefore, the tax abatement period changes too from 15 years, or at least with this existing pilot, I believe the most tax exemption or tax abatement is 14 years, really. And then this year, I mean, this next one will be 20 years. So with the extended tax abatement period, Latham actually proposed to decrease the total tax abatement percentage from 80%, which is equal to ITAP and what the existing lease is at right now, to 70%. And then to increase its targeted employment and payroll from 1,404 employees and annual payroll of just under $99 million to 1,700 employees and an annual payroll of $130 million. And that's an increase of about 21% and 31% respectively. And also shows, you know, another evidence of this being a good deal. It's working out, this existing pilot, by creating these jobs in Jefferson. So JEDCO worked with our special counsel, David Wolf and Kate, I think, as well, of Adams and Reese. And we've set these proposed terms in this below table, table one. Again, total CapEx, $400 million, term of the lease up to 20 years, tax abatement percentage, 70% rather than the existing 80%. So that means the annual pilot rent is being proposed at 30% of what the taxes would have been if the property were not tax exempt. And the number of years to bring assets into the lease would be 10 years. And then the annual retention of jobs, 1,700, and $130 million in payroll. In addition to those are the primary terms of the agreement. But we've also agreed to change the calculation of clawback rent, which is the payment that's due to JEDCO if the company fails to meet its targeted employment or payroll for any given year. And essentially, we doubled that penalty and completely eliminate all pilot savings for a year in which the company's annual employment count or payroll falls at or below 50% of the targeted amount. And there's an example of that clawback formula in Table 2. Additionally, we were intrigued by the whole concept of prime shrimp, and of course want to capture that in Jefferson Parish, and ideally would capture it on the west bank of Jefferson in the Avondale area, where we have vacant lands and undeveloped properties. So what we've done is we've added a kind of a sweetener to the deal, whereas if the company locates and operates prime shrimp division in a targeted area, and I'll define that in a second, then the tax abatement on prime shrimp property will be 85% as opposed to 70% for all of the other assets brought in under the pilot lease. So the agreement identifies four targeted areas, and I'm so sorry, and I wanted to pull it on the screen, but this doesn't seem to be working right at the moment. It's on my screen, but you do have a map in your packets, but it is black and white. It's hard to see, but it's generally Avondale, a Waggaman area leading to Avondale, where Avondale Shipyards is. South of that land is undeveloped, largely in its natural state. A portion of Nine Mile Point, if you're familiar with that part of Avondale, where you see a lot of vacant properties. And then also a section along the river, not too far away in Marrero, which is where we have brownfields, formerly operated as Knight Celotex in Johns Manville. Those sites have been acquired since by other entities, and actually we've done some brownfield assessment work on those two sites. So already we're trying to reposition those properties for commerce, and we wanted to present those as an option for Latham to redevelop and return investment to those areas. The existing lease requires Latham to maintain its corporate headquarters and its main admin offices here in Jefferson Parish, and that will continue into this proposed lease. And then Table 3 in your memo includes a comparison of these and other remaining deal terms of the lease. against the new, the existing lease against the new lease. So you'll see conditions of early termination are the same, that Leitrim can decide on its own, elect on its own to reconvey the property and take it out from under the pilot structure. But also, if Leitrim is not able to meet their targeted employment or payroll for 2 one-year periods, whether they're consecutive or not, that's the, that gives JEDCO the ability to unwind the pilot. Leitrim's failure to make or cause to be made any rental payments, when we say rental payments, that's pilot rent, as we call it, annual administrative rent, which is something that JEDCO collects for administering these incentive deals, or even clawback rent for a failure to make that payment for more than 20 days after the due date. And they have some time to rectify that. Leitrim's removal of its corporate headquarters and main administrative offices in Jefferson. That would be, give us the ability to unwind that pilot. And then the last one is the, what I said first, actually, Leitrim can elect at any time to undo the pilot deal. Annual reporting is due February 1st of each year, and it's basically Leitrim has to report. Leitrim is keeping track of their assets that they're bringing in under the pilot, the assessed value of all of those assets, and the amount of taxes that would be owed if those assets were not tax exempt. And Leitrim does a calculation of clawback rent if their pilot or if their employment or payroll is under what's under the targeted, but that's required to be shown on this report. The annual administrative rent is JEDCO's rent. We assess that for administering the deal. It's due every year of the pilot, with the exception of the year in which the pilot closes. The fee is based on a fee schedule that our board authorized and approved a few years back. But it's based on the capital investment, the CapEx of the project. So the initial fee of closing will be based on the $400 million potential asset or CapEx in the agreement. But then afterward, we take a look at what's actually been conveyed to JEDCO. And so that pilot rent or annual admin rent increases over time as Leitrim puts more and more into this pilot. And closing costs as well, that's again based on our fee schedule. And that really sums it up, but I'm happy to answer any questions. And of course, David's here, Dion as well, who can provide explanation. Yes.
What's the admin fee currently?
Oh gosh. Well, I can look that up.
All right. just add more out of curiosity.
I think it was 40 to 50. It sounds familiar. It's based on the total amount that they brought in. They weren't able to bring in, or they did not bring in the full $250 million. I think it was 100 something, maybe. So they still had some room, but our pilot lease, of course, and that period of bringing the assets in ended on December 31st of last year. But I apologize. I can do
the math
if you want.
No, it's not necessary. In the context of the history with Leitrim, it's mm-hmm. been ongoing. Have we ever had to deal with a clawback?
I have not.
Okay.
No, if anything, Leitrim reported increased jobs and increased payroll over time.
And I'm happy we have it in there. They're going to maintain their headquarters here, but has there ever been any discussion about them being interested in moving? Or?
They
do have holdings in other parishes as well, so that's something we always want to just make sure that we're...
I'm sure they have many options. I just didn't know if they were...
I do want to also just, in terms of the clawbacks, and one of the reasons we think this is a really, really good deal for both parties is, of course, it does relieve them from the burden of having to go through the multiple approvals every time they buy industrial equipment. But also to bring to your attention, in his recent executive order, the governor has de-emphasized the job creation element of ITEP, which is essentially the benefit we're trying to create here. So the fact that this has been successful in retaining a number of jobs and creating additional jobs is good for us over and above what ITEP would require.
And I want to add, because I just looked it up, the current annual admin rent is at $60,000 now, and it'll remain for the existing pilot. Of course, we'll see a fluctuation in this new pilot.
So so they didn't max out the last pilot, the $250 million. They're at somewhere under $200 million, right? Is that property is staying in the original pilot? It's not moving over to this pilot, is that right?
Correct, it's staying.
So this is a new $400 million?
Yes.
Basically creating a new bucket for them
new
to
bucket,
put acquisitions from here
forward.
Correct.
So that they'll have the something under $200 million in the first pilot, plus the availability of an additional $400 million.
Right.
And one of the things that I really think would be a helpful illustration when we look at these is the tax computation, so we can turn this into dollars, which is something I always have to do side math to do.
You know, that, and so, what I could do, if I could get this to work, I'd show you just an example of our tracking system and how we do record the assessments and compute the amount of taxes.
Right. I know there's some variables in there, right?
There are lots of variables, yeah. It's more difficult with personal property because there could be, you know, different depreciation
right.
schedules for certain types of equipment, so that gets to be really difficult. But we do that just so you all know that the assessor actually has to assess tax exempt property. And taxing entities have to report the amount of taxes that are being abated every year through the Government Accounting Standards Board, GASB 77. So we do that. In fact, what we collect and report, I send to the sheriff's office, and the sheriff's office is using that for the footnotes for the annual audits of all the taxing entities in the parish. But if any time that you guys are interested in looking at that, you're welcome. I can be happy to show you.
And just, you know, just in case my math, I'm doing side math again, so $400 million, 70% of what it would be assessed at is $280 million. And then they're going to save, I'm doing it at a 0.59%, which is what property tax would roughly be. I know it's variable, so something like $1.6 million. Does that sound right? Is what they would save each and every year if they max it out to the 400? And I realize there's a roll into that, right?
I don't know what the 0.5.
Yeah, what's
is.
The 0.5?
I just Googled it. What is the property tax rate in Jefferson Parish?
Well, the rate
0.59 of 1%.
No,
what's the effective rate?
The village.
No, and unincorporated, it's something like 0.011, yeah.
Well, Elmwood, I think, is 0.131713 or something like that.
We're using like
130
or 135.
Yeah.
That percentage probably, just because of who looks at that, is probably residential property too, which would throw it off, because this would be assessed at
15%.
15%.
Of fair market value instead of 10.
All right. Somebody done.
Well, I mean, if you took $400 million
yeah.
times 15%, that would be $60 million, right? So that's $60,000 per mill. To multiply that times the millage rate, and that would be the total millage on, if it was assessed $400 million,
right.
which it probably wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be really an outside number.
So 360,000.
60,000 times 135,
60.
Or
130
probably.
Yeah, that number sounds closer. Yeah, the 130 sounds
60,000.
Be about 7.8 million.
7.8, yeah.
But it's going to take 10 years before the full $400 million would be conveyed. So that's
right.
And by the time that happens, some of the early properties probably not. Won't be worth what it originally was.
The depreciation takes it all the way down to 20%
right.
of the original cost. you know, it's mostly personal property that we talked about, machinery and equipment.
Yeah, and if a piece of equipment is brought off, out of line, is not being used, or it loses its life, we would have to convey that piece over to, back to Latrim, take it out from under the pilot. And that would adjust, obviously, the savings and the taxes savings they're realizing in the tax number. So just as an example, Latrim has 96, it was about 97 million more that they could have put under the pilot. So they have 153 million in the pilot now. The full tax amount is 5.8 million. Mm-hmm. They're paying, and this was as of the end of 2023, 1,158,000 basically, and their annual savings was 4.6 million.
But you'd be hard pressed to get from $153 million total capital investment to that number, just because of the depreciation and some pieces that will have been taken out of service and what the millage rate is. You know, some of it's, you know, 1 year into its useful life, some of it's 3 or 4 years into its useful life.
Well, and we already have this use case though. Those are pretty good numbers, right?
Yeah.
So 5.8 million in taxes, paying 1.15 million and so saving 4.6 million a year. That's kind of the math. Like to try to figure out with all of this stuff where we're ending up, because it just helps in sort of the cost benefit analysis.
Well, yeah, Lacey, that I think it's called Exhibit B or whatever that we have to file every year.
Yeah, the annual
report.
It has
all that information.
Yeah, we ask the board.
So every year we have to ask for it.
And we work with the assessor to get that information.
But you can't do a pure extrapolation from the previous pilot, because this one is at a lower. This is at 70%
right,
versus
so.
The, yeah. So
and
just
it
to complicate
be a little more,
a little
right.
further.
And it depends on where they invest.
And then there's an 85, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it could go to 85%.
Right.
And the millage is going to change in the next 10
years.
Right.
Right. Well, that's, 2024, this is a reassessment.
No, it just helps the ballpark it though, so it'll go, so they're going to continue saving the 4.6 million a year till this pilot expires, and then we're going to do another pilot that's about, almost double, well, they 153 million, so it's a little more than twice the pilot that it's already locked in, right? So we'll be saving something close to 10 mil a year plus the 5.8. Are we in the ballpark? 15 million a year in savings.
I think
until this one expires and the other one kicks in. And
that's the high
side.
That's the high side, I would say.
Yeah.
And they're not going to put the full 400 million in year one.
Right, no, it rolls
it
in. I mean, they didn't even get to the.
Then that's what I said, they never
they didn't
got
get to the 250 in 5 years.
I mean,
yeah.
We set it high just because we didn't want to have to come back. Everything and come back in case we went over.
Yeah.
Well, any other questions? I think from the staff side, this has worked. This has been a great arrangement. We've been happy with it. I believe Latrim has been happy with it as well. So, if you don't have any other questions, I'll seek a motion to recommend this to the executive committee on Thursday.
So move.
Motion from Joe.
Second.
Second, Jim. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. That motion passes. Next up is to review.
See you Thursday.
Next up would be the review and discussion of KHA Affordable Properties LP, pilot lease and lease terms.
Lacey, sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. I have it up here, but for some reason,
I have you one right here.
Right. So this is, potentially could be our JEDCO's first affordable housing pilot. We received an application for a pilot from KHA Affordable Properties LP. It's a for-profit limited partnership with General Partner KHA GP LLC, Inter Brand Development LLC, and R4 Ken Acquisition LLC. The KHA GP LLC is owned by the Kenner Housing Authority or Alliance. It's a single-purpose nonprofit organization created by the Kenner Housing Authority, whose mission it is to provide affordable housing to very low-income residents in the city of Kenner. The Integrand Development Company, that is a Louisiana-based affordable housing development firm, and R4 Ken Acquisition is serving as the construction lender who will take advantage of the low-income housing tax credits that are available to investors with these kind of projects. There are currently 137 residential units of the Kenner Housing Authority. This project will actually, it involves the entire portfolio of the Kenner Housing Authority, but it will reduce the number of units from 137 to 121. It includes a mix of residential types from single family to duplexes, multifamily apartments, and it also includes a maintenance building for the KHA and the KHA's office. The location of these units are scattered somewhat on across KHA's 31 lots in the city of Kenner, but they're primarily located immediately north and immediately south of Interstate 10 above the airport. Then there are a couple of maps in your memo packet as well, although this may show it better. I'll pull it up in a second. The project will consist of new construction of 42 units and then the rehabilitation of 79 units at a total project cost of about $33 million. The project, you know, this is not a huge job generator, but that's not the point of this. It's about affordable housing, but it will create one part-time maintenance position at $25,000 a year, and then it'll retain the existing five jobs of the KHA. So currently the KHA owns the property, which means that it's tax exempt. And then KHA will enter into a ground lease with the development company for the rehab and rebuilding of the affordable housing projects. These units must be rented to residents whose income is at or below 80% of the average median income, or AMI, adjusted for the size of the family. Total construction timeline is estimated at 22 months. They're anticipating to start construction very quickly in April of 2024, and they're estimating a completion date of April 2026, or just around there. But the new construction will run at the same time as the rehab of the existing units, but it's likely some are going to be done before others, and so some will need to be conveyed before others, in other words, to be brought under the pilot. So we are anticipating multiple conveyances with this project. So the proposed lease before you, it's actually where when I sent the memo, I've kind of underlined the paragraph to tell you that we were still in negotiations with the developer. And that if we had any substantive changes after on Monday, that we'd bring them to you. So I believe we do have one change at least, but I'll let David, if you don't, or Philip, I'm sorry, you've been working on this one. I'll let you share that. But the company requested a 20-year term with 100% annual property tax abatement. In your table one, which is attached to your memo, you'll see some of the major deal terms. Again, $33 million in CapEx. The project description, you see that it's 121 units, different types, single family, duplex, multifamily. This will not include any personal property, not any machinery, equipment, household appliances, furniture, or other movable property, unless it is conveyed, but at this point, we're stating that it's not a part of this pilot lease. It'll just be the improvements, the buildings and fixtures. Term of the lease is proposed at 20 years of tax abatement for each component, with component being a single-family residence, or in the case of a duplex, it would be, well, would it be the duplex or each unit, David? We used the words element and component in this agreement.
It would be the duplex.
The duplex would be the, okay. And, okay, for each component of the project, the leasehold estate commences on the date that it's conveyed to JEDCO again, and then simultaneously leased back to the developer under the pilot. The annual pilot rent, we're just proposing $1 per year. That can be paid in full upfront if necessary, and I think the developer has requested that. The pilot rent, even though it's $20, it will be paid to the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office and treated as if it were a property tax payment to be distributed again to the taxing entities. Here's where I believe we'll have a change, and Philip, I'll let you expand on this, but we had some discussions about imposing a tenant income clawback rent.
Right, so initially we had put in the lease the clawback rent if they didn't meet the requirements under leasing to affordable, for affordable housing and such, and keeping the property up. And Jim Hill with the developers here can kind of explain, but they have an issue with their financing and their investment partner, because one, this property is already tax exempt. So the only reason it's going into a pilot is for these tax credits, that they have a for-profit investor coming in that's gonna own it. And so that's why they've asked for the 100% abatement. And so adding these clawback provisions into the lease creates uncertainty for the investors and their numbers and projections, and which is the reason they wanted, another reason they really need this pilot is so that they have, they can forecast out. And so they've asked that the clawbacks be taken out, because this is really already an exempt property. The point is to get the properties back into commerce for low income housing. And I don't know, Jim, you want to add some more?
Yeah, you know, the 137 units that we presently have, I think there are 82 of them that were untenable and damaged in the in one of the storms that were down here, and it sat vacant for a while. And the only way that housing authorities throughout the country or throughout the state have are able to rehab any of their properties or actually construct new ones is through this mechanism of a development partnership and bonds and tax credits, where an investor comes in. The investor in this particular case is R4 Capital, and they are, as most investors are, very strict in terms of analyzing what all the costs are and knowing what all the costs are up front, so that when they invest their money, they know that the project, once it's completed and put online, is going to be able to sustain itself. And so with the uncertainty of a clawback provision, that created an issue that they were not going to be able to underwrite except at the full value of the taxes on the property, which would then mean that the dollars that were going to be put into the project would not be sufficient to do the construction and the rehabilitation. And so that's why we asked that the clawback provision be removed if possible.
And so I'll add, with talking with Jerry and Lacey, David and I earlier this morning, you know, I think in one of the concerns is that JEDCO gets stuck with property that is deteriorated to such an extent that it causes problems, and you don't want to be left holding properties that are uninhabitable. So what we have discussed is, and it's already in the lease, that if they don't keep up the properties,
JETCO has the right to put them in default and eventually force them to buy back the properties or terminate their lease. We would expand that section to make it more, to make it clearer on exactly what is, at what point does it become, do they become in default? And to make it clear, so JETCO can clearly turn back the property if it becomes a problem with the lease, so that JETCO is protected in that sense.
Our concern primarily is not so much a financial clawback, because the properties, as explained, are tax exempt currently under the KHA ownership. We want to make sure from an image standpoint that JETCO's name is not attached to a project that hasn't performed, or, and not that we have any reason to believe this, but we just want to make sure that those safeguards are in place for us.
And does that include section 7.02, page 25, all of these prohibited uses would also cause a default?
Yeah, that's policy goals for the project.
You said
7.2?
Well, any...
7.02, yeah.
Sure, so if...
It's on the summary.
Yeah, yeah, if that... the summary.
Yeah.
If they're in default of any provision of the lease, then JETCO has the right to terminate it. So that would fall under the default provision. But we would just, I guess, beef up more of the deterioration of the property.
Yeah. And you could take a look at the events of default and remedies, Article 9, I think maybe page 32 or something like that. Let's see, I don't know if I have that. Just to you see, you know, what our options are.
I was actually going to ask if we take away that clawback provision, other than the administrative fee, I mean, is there any other remuneration that JETCO is going to get?
In terms of an economic
right.
Not, there's nothing common.
Just the administrative rent.
Right.
Okay. As Lacey and Jerry, you know, alluded to, this is different than most of the pilots, really all the pilots that y'all have ever seen before, because this is property that isn't on the tax rolls now. It's really public property, and it never would be on the tax rolls, except for the fact that they are financing this project in what is essentially a public-private partnership that requires private ownership of the improvements in order to get the benefit of these tax credits, which is something that JETCO is not involved in. And that creates a kind of, that creates extra capital that they can put into the project and make their investment go farther than it would otherwise. But it has the unintended consequence of, because the property is privately owned, that it's on the tax rolls. And it's not property that ever was intended to be on the rolls. And so this is sort of meant to roll back that unintended consequence and allow them really to get the full benefit of these tax credits and the extra leverage that it gives to their capital investment. This may be new to JETCO, and it's actually relatively new in the last 15 to 20 years to me. For housing, we've done similar deals in New Orleans for housing, very similar to this, with the Housing Authority, but they were in the 2000s, you know, so 15 to 20 years ago. More recently, the Orleans School Board has used tax credit programs like this to renovate charter schools. And it's run into the same problem where it's a public-private partnership, the tax credits.
Property that wasn't on the tax rolls.
Right,
now.
It's for public schools.
Yeah.
But it allows the school board to have renovated those old schools and put them back into commerce. And they never were, they're public schools. So they never were intended to be or should be on the tax rolls. And we just sort of needed to unroll that last little unintended consequence of the tax credit aspect so that they wouldn't be subject to taxes. Once the compliance period's over and the tax credits are really no longer a factor, the parties typically unwind the deal because there's no need for the property to be owned by anybody else once the tax credits are done. So you know, that's down the road on these deals. But the big difference is, unlike, you know, a warehouse or a commercial facility or even an apartment building, which is another property we're looking at right now that's privately owned, these would never be on the tax rolls. And so this isn't costing the taxing bodies anything. And so the concept of a clawback is really based on the amount of taxes that they're saving, which isn't really a concept here because there are no taxes or shouldn't be any taxes.
Yeah, I see the risk in this, the one we've already talked about, which is that it's either not maintained or it's put into some use that's unpalatable for the location and has a negative impact on the surrounding area. So I would say that I'm looking at the section 702 where it says policy goals and it says this is the intent. I might want to make sure that this language here is strong enough such that if it becomes a short-term rental or a fraternity house or a dormitory, that's a clear violation and then we can cancel this pretty quickly without any vagaries.
You can address that probably. Those sort of uses, we're sort of the tail wagging the dog, right? If you think this is a lot of paperwork.
Right. We will be under requirements from the Louisiana Housing Corporation with regard to the tax credits, and especially under some HUD requirements because of the tenants that will be there that will require us to clearly maintain all of this property in a safe and sanitary and affordable manner, and clearly used it for fraternity houses or anything else or commercial purposes. Rent are not allowed under any of those requirements, let alone what's would be in your lease. So I don't anticipate any of that being an issue or being a problem to have you put those in if you want.
There's one more, and I don't know if this is something that we can really address but it was in the news recently that there is a development on North Shore, I think it was either Lacombe or Slidell, where in order to make a profit, the landlord there figured out that, boy, I can fill these things up, and they were all substandard situations. And he's got a little community of sex offenders going. And y'all read about, this was all over the news, what was that, just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that this is falling into that category in apples and apples in any respect whatsoever, but, and in that case, the community is apparently dismantling this because they're violating all kinds of density ordinances. But for that, they have a problem that's creating a problem in the community. I just thought I'd bring it up. I don't want to, not make a comment that's going through my head that impacts what we should be thinking about. That the risk here for JEDCO is that if JEDCO had given tax breaks to something like that, and that could be us in the future, that would be on the front pages of the newspaper, and that would be a big problem. So I don't know if we can directly address something like that, but at least it's something we should be thinking about, making sure we're keeping clear.
I think all of your issues are well to think about all of the issues and things that could happen. This is going to be low income, affordable housing. The applicants have to apply and they have to be approved in terms of qualification by their income and their family size. And those are monitored yearly, just like your form that we would have to fill out, even if it's not a clawback provision. I assume we would have to fill out that form, except for the clawback provision in it. So the type of residents that normally are always in these type of projects are such that they do qualify because they're under the median income and their families typically, because there's more than, you know, two bedrooms and so forth. So I don't think we would have an issue if you wanted to put that language in there about how you want to word it.
Inappropriate density of sex offenders.
The likelihood of that occurring in this type of a project.
I mean, who'd have thunk until it happened, right?
Right.
Nobody, you know, until something like that happens, you don't know, you got to build something like that to prevent it.
There'll be a rule about that now, and somebody will say, why is this in here?
That's probably a market rate unit too, that he can charge whatever he wants to and so forth. So, but yeah, we.
I mean, you know, it's a fact. I mean, look, if you can actually go to the website and look it up, and you'd be surprised how many sex offenders are in our communities all over the place. But it's not like what they have there with 40 of them in one shanty.
It was 140, I think 140 of them within a.
Yeah, right. One block.
Who is in charge of actually, and I know the tenants have to apply, but who is ultimately in charge of approving the tenants? Is it the housing authority?
That would be the housing authority in conjunction with a management agent would be in charge of that. That is correct.
Well, to your point, I mean, are we looking to hold them?
I think if there's no objections to building in some language on this specific case that's just been in the news, I have no issues at all. I wouldn't anticipate that this kind of thing is going to be affordable to 140 sex offenders, even at, you know, affordable housing rates. The thing on it just occurred to me literally driving over here and looking at some of this language. I was like, you know, whatever mistake went on there, we need to make sure don't make that mistake here.
I mean, I don't know housing law, but do we run the risk of any sort of housing discrimination if they're in a family that qualifies for?
That occurred to me as well. That's why I asked the question, if there's no a barrier to it.
I mean, what we can do is afterwards is we'll go through this and look at the sections that currently are dealing with compliance with local laws and regulations.
Yeah.
There is somewhere in here, there's a paragraph, I couldn't put my finger on it right now, that I know here it is. It's at the end of section 702, that they won't discriminate on the basis of race. This is from some other housing deal, which sort of tracks what they're not allowed to do anyway under the federal housing standards. So that's what is here. You know, like if a sex offender applies and qualifies, meets all the other qualifications, I don't think you
can prohibit
to turn them away.
I agree with you. Right. That's why I'm saying they're around. I know.
Or anybody,
you can't
for whatever
turn them out to the streets and then make it illegal for them to get a house.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole body of law, you know, in these housing cases about families with children and families with people with disabilities and so forth. And the laws are very specific. So we'll be sure that, you know, whatever, we don't need to rewrite all the laws and put them in here.
Right.
We'll just say, we'll just beef up somewhere, wherever it alludes to that, make it even stronger.
Yeah.
But they're going to comply with all applicable federal, state, and local regulations, zoning laws. So
I expected when I asked the question that it would probably be not be something that you would specifically put in the lease. But as long as
sex offenders are not a protected class, we understand that. But
that's true.
But to your point, I feel we should obviously be holding the General Housing Authority as well as the management company responsible for the approval of the tenants, and therefore under applicable laws for compliance. At least there should be some monitoring of that. Do we have any sort of monitoring?
I mean, I will tell you, so I'm involved in a state program, and the state is only approving payments to entities in this venture capital program after everybody signs off that there's no sex offenders involved in the company. I'll just throw that out there. It can't be illegal to.
I can go back and look.
Yeah.
If it's not illegal, we can certainly add it.
Yeah.
I just don't know the answer off the.
We don't want to put too much burden on JEDCO to see that these sorts of rules and regulations is because there's just not, you know, for the amount of annual fee that they're paying, there's just not, you know, the overhead to pay for that, or there's not the money to pay for that overhead. Whenever possible in these documents, I try to piggyback on other things that the developers already have to do, rather than creating new obligations on their part. So like on the ones that have clawbacks based on jobs, I piggyback on their reports to the Louisiana Workforce Commission, which they have to file anyway, because they're an employer, not make them come up with some special report to JEDCO other than what they're already doing. So we don't really want to impose, I don't.
No, and I wouldn't even make it a reporting requirement, nor is any of these things in 702 a reporting requirement, right? It's just a violation of the lease if it happens.
And we find out.
Right? And we find out about it, so that doesn't really create an administrative burden. But I think it's worth looking into, just because this is something that just happened in a local community. It is something that could be a huge existential threat to JEDCO if you had done it and that terrible thing happened, right? And so the job of the board is to, you know, really protect JEDCO in these things.
Well, I mean, we've literally just like since this morning have sort of reached this agreement of how we're going to take the clawbacks out and just kind of focus on
this. I'm totally okay
with
the clawbacks coming out. Yeah.
So we're gonna look at everything and make sure. And this discussion is helpful to inform some of the issues that we're going to look at.
Yeah.
Bob, you have a question? A
couple of questions. One has to do with the issue of the property being maintained and JEDCO administering. But the other question first, with equipment and appliances not being part of the project, is there a reason for that?
Well, those have to be, and I don't know, are my attorneys, but they would have to be conveyed with by a bill of sale, right? And so if a unit had to be replaced, then we'd have to, it would be a lot of administrative burden, really, a lot of conveyances.
A lot of paperwork.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think of a habitable unit having to have equipment and appliances, so just
well, they
curious
have to
why
have it, but it's just not going to be owned by JEDCO.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there may be no tax consequences to that, or there may be, I don't know, but we don't want to have them coming to us every month saying, well, we had to pull the refrigerator out of this unit and put a new one in, so we need you to sell us the old one back, and here we're going to convey this. We have the same thing in Latrim, just so you know. Because their pilot is mostly movable, but we have a minimum cost, so they can't convey anything that costs less than $5,000. Because we don't want to be fooling with office furniture and the kitchen, you know, equipment and stuff like that. You know, we want it to be major stuff because we'd just be overwhelmed with the constant in and out of that type of small appliances and furniture and stuff like that.
Sure. Okay. In context of y'all administering, particularly if you're concerned about units being deteriorated because of the habitants, whatever they're doing inside the units, how do y'all plan on administering to general conditions in a project?
I think just like Michael's concerns, we probably would only be made aware once it became public, or, you know, we're not going to be inspecting.
Okay, so there's really no inspection issue that y'all are going through. Okay, that was really more the question, if y'all are going to be semi-annually or some degree of frequency you actually inspecting units.
And that comes up with the commercial pilots too, that the buildings have to be kept in good repair, and so.
I mean, we can do, and if something.
A general visual. Like,
if something piques our interest, then
I think that there's a section in this, in all pilots, where the lessor has the right to inspect them.
Yeah.
Oh, so let me just finalize this.
Next section, 703, actually.
Okay. So yeah, with pulling out the clawbacks, of course, that would. Obviously amend that particular section 303, you know, and any wherever else in the lease where there's some reference to that. So 401 termination provisions, you know, we had on the 1st December 31st following two calendar years during which the lessee owed any tenant income clawback rent, that's going to go, right? And they will pay an annual administrative rent, and again, that's in accordance with JEDCO's fee schedule. It's due by February 1st, and it's based on the total cost of improvements to that date, basically. So that will, has the potential if to increase, let's say if not all the units are done and placed in service in 2026, then 2027 we accept more, then that will increase the annual admin rent. And you mentioned the policy goals, obviously those, we want to be sure that the units aren't used for other purposes, that would not be in compliance with affordable housing policy. And I mentioned the events of default, that's in section 9901. You know, that might be where we beef up or strengthen some of the language, just to ensure the, you know, public perception of or image of JEDCO, in particular when units are fallen in disrepair and aren't maintained.
And I'm totally fine also with like an appropriate notice and cure period. Yeah. It shouldn't be terribly draconian.
Right.
Just
yeah.
Want to project. Yeah.
And not to downplay your concern at all, but I will say, just from a historical perspective, the New Orleans Industrial Development Board literally owns every public housing project in the city of New Orleans under one of these arrangements, and has since 2004 till 2009, I guess, was the range when it was done. We've never had a complaint. Certainly there are substandard units. There are probably units that, you know, tenants have complained about. It's never sort of come to anybody's attention that the IDB technically is the owner of those properties. Now, you know, these things happen and somebody could find out, make a big deal, and it would be, you know, it would be a lot to have to explain. We're prepared to do that. But just to reassure you, it hasn't happened in that situation,
right,
which is past performance doesn't
higher risk than
future
where we're talking about, yeah,
performance, but that's my experience. Okay. Nevertheless, I'm sensitive to this, and this was really the tenor of our conversation earlier today. We're going to focus really on protecting you all,
yeah,
from any bad fallout, you know, from properties that aren't being kept up, and that's going to be what we're going to try to focus on,
yeah,
as we finalize this document.
Any other questions on the KHA affordable properties pilot? I will say that I'll just end with this. We're gonna, I'll seek a motion to recommend this to the board. As was mentioned, we're still, as of just today, we're talking about removing the clawback language, but beefing up the other out for us and compelling them to purchase the property back. So Thursday at the board meeting, when that motion is made, if we have not yet agreed on that, we'll ask the board to approve it in its substantial format and giving us some ability to continue to finesse that language. So with that in mind, I'll seek a motion to recommend the KHA Affordable Properties LP pilot to the executive committee. Motion by Bob, second, Jim. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? None. The motion passes. That brings us to the third item, which is to review and discuss the Reserve at LaPalco Place LLC pilot lease and lease terms.
Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
I
you.
I will see you all
thank you.
Thursday
morning. Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Are you driving all the way back and then coming
I'm
back
coming,
on
I'm
Thursday?
I'm driving all the way back and coming back Wednesday night.
Okay. Wow.
See you Thursday.
Thank you, yes.
So this agreement, actually, we presented the draft to the company, but I believe they're still reviewing and haven't provided comments. So would you, I did give this presentation at the last pilot committee meeting.
Right.
Would you like it again? Okay. If not, then I would, you know, just ask that we defer until, you know, when the project is ready to be brought forward.
So with that, I'll seek a motion to defer the Reserve at LaPalco Place LLC pilot.
So moved.
Second.
Seconded by Michael. All those in favor of deferring, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed.
Do we know where they are with the financing? Because I know there was a question.
With the reserve?
Yeah.
I think it all still stands, but they've actually, what's given them more time is I think it was HUD, I'm not sure. There was a deadline that was gonna be right away in April, has now been pushed back to June. So I guess that's why they're taking their time and reviewing the lease.
Any other questions or comments?
Do we recycle paper, as always?
We will. Well, thank you all for your time. I know these are complex and a lot to get through, but I know the board appreciates you all weighing in on these items, so appreciate that. With that, I'll seek a motion to adjourn. We're adjourned. Thank you.